Thanks for tuning in to the HR Uprising podcast. I'm your host, Lucinda Carney. The HR Uprising is focused on helping forward-thinking people professionals deliver real lasting value in their organisations. I'm a chartered psychologist, speaker and trainer, and recently authored the best-selling business book, How to Be a Change Superhero. My day job is founder and CEO of software and training business Actus. This gives me the opportunity to work with other businesses like yours. We are focused on building a better workplace for people wherever they are located, with the help of our performance, learning and talent management software and our training and consultancy services. Every week on the podcast, I will be covering different topics and challenges, joined by relevant experts and real-life people professionals. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really hope you enjoy and get value from this week's episode. Hello and welcome to this week's HR Uprising podcast. And I'm delighted to have Phil Holdsworth this week. He's joining me from Aurum Gold Limited, and we're going to talk about the topic of financial well-being, which is incredibly topical, I feel, at the moment, unfortunately. Phil, thanks so much for joining us. Would you like to just introduce yourself a little?
Yeah, thank you very much, Lucinda, for inviting me. Yeah, I'm the founder and director of Aurum Gold, and we help businesses improve the financial well-being of their employees. And we do it through two ways, really. One is money psychology, helping them understand their relationship with money, what drives their choices and behaviours, and also financial education, which is about helping to improve the way they manage their finances.
And how did you get into this area?
I've been in finance for nearly 25 years. I worked in the investment management world before I transferred over to the money and debt advice arena. So I spent quite a few years there, and I saw all the things that sort of led people to some challenging situations. So seeing that as well, one of the things that really stuck with me was the whole revolving door syndrome, in so much as you would help people out of a difficult situation, and for some people, sometime later, they would be back in that same situation. And it caused me to ask the question why. And equally, it caused me to ask the question why with regards to those people who don't need to worry about money, and why they still do. Why do they still stress over it?
So the whole psychology thing, that you became kind of intrigued by.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. The thing is, if you can't get to the bottom of those things, as much education as you want wouldn't necessarily solve some of those issues. And so it's really looking behind what brings a person to that point of that stress and anxiety. Is it just a lack of money, or is it something more that's going on? That they are not aware of, and therefore, unless you unpick it, you just create this revolving door.
So obviously we'll go and explore some of these things about the psychology. I mean, this is the first time I've covered this topic on, we're coming up to 190 episodes of HR Uprising, but it does feel really topical at the moment. And I mentioned to you earlier, someone had asked about an expert in relation to HR, because it's not typically something, I guess, as HR professionals that we would have had to get involved in. I mean, what's your view in terms of the topicality of it and, you know, the link with HR for this as a subject?
If you think about well-being and true well-being, you're thinking about the whole person, the emotional, psychological, physical, spiritual, every aspect about us. So if one area is affected, you can guarantee it'll affect other areas. So in the workplace, if somebody is worrying, stressed, they're naturally distracted. Therefore, they're not fully engaged, not as fully productive as they could be, could be taking time off through stress-related illnesses, or find them leaving the company to go elsewhere because they think that having more money is going to solve the problem for them. Equally, from an employer point of view, if you do support your workforce with regards to issues around well-being, then you get it's interesting how you can turn around that sort of loyalty and increase productivity, increased engagement. And LinkedIn had a bit of a research recently on what employers would or employees would look for in terms of support within the workplace. And the biggest area was financial well-being.
I mean, because I was just thinking what else, I suppose how this is an example of HR's role and remit broadening in terms of people's expectations. Because I mean, there was a point when people wouldn't necessarily talk about diet or, you know, health in terms of physical health, and going into this sort of financial health. And so it is broadening. I take your point that it is about the whole person in terms of, looking at the stressors, but it's also a tricky one for HR, because often we are responsible for reward. So we might feel at the moment where there's a cost of living crisis and inflation running at 10%, and we're unable to provide a corresponding 10% pay increase, that people are going to come to us in a way sort of not necessarily out saying, you know, the reason I've got a problem financially is because you're not paying me enough. So it's an interesting dilemma, I suppose, for us to decide whether we get involved in this or otherwise.
I think there's a number of things here. If I just address the first one, and that is the feeling from an employer or HR point of view that, we're not financial educators, we're not financial experts. That's not an area for us to get into, or perhaps that's personal to them. And yet, actually, by opening that up as an area of potential support, it's amazing how that can assist people and turn situations around. The other thing, and I think this is a fallacy sometimes, and that is, it is true that people may feel like I don't earn enough to pay my bills. There's a factual part of that. You can see it. And somebody needs to think of ways and means in which they can increase either their income or reduce their expenditure. It's interesting as well, less than 50% of the working population have any kind of financial plan. They don't do any budgeting, spending plans or anything like that. And I ask the question why, and very often the thing that comes back is either I'm no good with money, I'm no good with numbers, it causes me stress when I think about it, therefore I don't want to go there. So there's the hope that there's more money than month in one sense. But we can be quite judgmental about that, because we say, well, it's your fault, you've just buried your head in the sand and not faced up to it. But if people don't feel able to, they don't feel equipped to, and I don't mean just the education side, but just the fact that they have a belief. Because let me just say this. People think that money's going to solve all the problems. It's not. I can guarantee that 100%. So you can increase their income, so they're covering everything. Okay, that's fine. However, people will still worry about money. Why is that? Why is it that somebody who doesn't need to worry about money is worrying about it? Why is it that somebody, and I've had clients talk to me about the fact that they're very, very good with money, they manage the money, they know what's coming in, they know what's going out, they're very good on that front, and yet they stress over it. And one of the things that's really struck me is the beliefs that people hold about money. So, for example, I ask people a simple question. In a word, what does money mean to you? And most common answers will be things like happiness, choice, security, freedom, you know, these things. And what they're saying there is, I'm looking to money to give me these things. So then my next question is, so how much money would you need to feel happiness or security or have choice or have freedom? And, you know, when you're thinking about asking that question, people think, you can see the cogs going. They've never been asked that question before. And they'll come up with a figure. I can guarantee you could double it, quadruple it. It doesn't matter. It'll never be enough, because what they're looking for money to give them is something that money doesn't have. It's a tool. It's an inanimate object. It's like me saying to an ornament, I don't like you anymore. I'm going to put you in the drawer. And the ornament suddenly saying to me, but I don't want to be in the drawer. I want to be on the mantelpiece or the windowsill. You know, it's as ludicrous as that. It enables us to to enjoy things, but happiness is a choice. Any behavioral scientist will tell you that. It will enable us to perhaps have more choices, but we've always got a choice, whatever the circumstances are. Nelson Mandela had nothing. It was all taken away from him. He was in a small cell for 30-odd years, and he had a choice, and he chose to prepare himself for the day when he would be released. And there's a man who led a nation through reconciliation. Now, that was a personal choice of his. His circumstances was that he was incarcerated, yet he was freer than the people who incarcerated him. It's an interesting thing to think about.
That's like the Frankl example, isn't it? Similar to one, the Viktor Frankl, the whole sort of who's in the concentration camps, and they talked about they can take away your liberty, but they can't take away your freedom. It's about what goes on in your head. The point I thought was quite interesting with these examples, because I thought, what's money mean to me? It means security, probably the first thing I say. And I can see how it's choice in terms of that, but that doesn't mean you don't have a choice. I take your point there completely. No. It was really what people are coming up with there are actually values. A lot of those examples you're saying, and you're saying that actually you can have those values, you can support those values, any of them, without money, but it does make it easier. The other thing that strikes me, and I don't know that this has been invalidated, but it is like 50 years old. You remember the Hertzberg management series, where they talk about that where people ask for money, they were talked about it as a hygiene factor. So while it's something that people complain about in terms of salary, if people don't feel they're paid enough, it really, people are very disgruntled. We've only got to look around at the strike actions going on all around us. But a pay rise doesn't provide people with lasting engagement. So it is, these all sort of play into each other, I guess, don't they?
If you ask people today, those in work, what is most important about work, very often money isn't the top issue. But it's actually about perhaps the type of work they're doing, the level of autonomy they might have within their work.
Well, those are longer term. Autonomy is a big one for longer term motivator, much more so than money.
And yet, you know, things like security, if we just explore that one thing, security, you're thinking, if somebody doesn't feel secure, so they need more money to feel secure. And you know full well that doesn't matter how much money they get, they'll never get to that point of feeling secure. It's almost like, oh, I thought it would have been this, but I need more. Then I need more. And it's interesting then what kind of behaviors you start to see in a person who is pursuing that need for security. We all need it, don't we? I mean, if you look at the hierarchy of needs, you're thinking about the basic needs that are needed with regards to, food on your plate, clothes on your back.
So we've gone into 60s management theories, haven't we? So let's go into how we talk about financial well-being. So having agreed that this is something that it's more than just money, there's something bigger to it. And it's something that, if we're going to look holistically at HR's role in terms of supporting people, this is another way in which we can support people's well-being. And of course, there'll be people out there, you know, we're all people as well, that can benefit from your thinking with regard to this. What would you say as the foundations? How can we, I guess, build our own financial well-being and support others in doing the same?
I think you've got to understand what is financial well-being. Out there at the moment, there are definitions for financial well-being. But if you look at each and every definition, I don't disagree with them. I just don't believe they go far enough. I think they're missing a key element. So if you think about financial well-being and you look at these definitions, often it's talking about the well-being of the money, not necessarily the person. So we talk about the connection between money and mental health, but the definition given actually leads to having enough to cover any sort of shocks, having enough to cover all your bills and things like this. But I believe there's a third building block. So there's we're dealing with the present and we're looking to the future. But I believe there's a third, and it's the past. It's understanding, where do our own money beliefs come from, and how do they shape the choices and the behaviors that we have today around money. If those beliefs are such, like some of the things that we've already been talking about, you can understand then why somebody can be quite stressed about money. And what we've got to do is to actually unpick those. It's not about psychotherapy or anything. It's just literally about dealing with the root cause of where a person's at today. And if we don't do that, then we're missing a key aspect of building true financial well-being. It's not just about how healthy the money is. That's money education. It's about healthy, how healthy my belief system and my unconscious behaviors are when I'm dealing with my finances. And that's probably
I was just going to say, is that because if you don't understand what the cause is in the first place, then people will end up, you can fix their money worries, for argument's sake, now, but they'll end up back in the same position again, because it's like the whole perception that you can't outperform your own image, self-image. If people they've shown that, you know, people who see someone who sees themselves as a fat person, fundamentally their self-image is of a fat person. They can lose 12 stone, but actually they'll put it back on until they change that self-belief. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
It's part of it, yeah, because having looked at some of the behaviours of people around money, I've dealt with successful people who've got money in the bank, manage their money well, yet are stressed about it. I had a client who, their backstory was simply they had an aunt who would often say to them, you must save money. It's really important that you save money. When they grew up into adulthood and they were managing their own finances, they were managing it well and they had savings. And I just happened to say to them, how often do you check your money? And they said, it transpired, it was several times a day. And I just said, what are you afraid of? And this person just burst into tears, told me the story of the aunt and said, you know, when I come to spend money, I find it so hard because I feel like I'm letting my aunt down. I feel really guilty and really ashamed about it. And she says, I hate this and I am so stressed. And you're thinking, right, we need to somehow unpack those beliefs and create new beliefs, new structures. It's like creating new neural pathways, new ways of thinking and ways in which we view things. Now, it won't happen overnight, but it's like any journey, it starts with a single step, doesn't it? And
so that's somebody who actually sounds like their anxiety was not proportionate or with their actual financial situation. So actually they were saving, they were in a good financial position, but they had disproportionate anxiety around it. So there's something there to, as you say, to look at the anxiety. What would you do with somebody who is in a really difficult financial situation? Their anxiety is well placed. How would you help them in that situation?
Well, naturally, in that situation, if, for example, they're carrying any form of debt or anything like that and they need help with it, then there's lots of free debt advice, money and free debt advice organisations out there, from your Citizens Advice, Step Change, Pay Plan, National Debt Line, Christians Against Poverty, all free. They should never, ever pay for it. And they're great. People like Christians Against Poverty get alongside a person, so they give them that sort of, I suppose, emotional and practical support. And that's what you really need to do when somebody is anxious because they literally don't have enough and they're building up debt and they can't see a way forward. It's very hard when you're in that situation. You're driven emotionally. It's very hard to think logically. And sometimes to have somebody come alongside you actually enables you then to start to look at the facts of a situation that may well be, the sooner they do it, there's more options available for them to be able to find their way out of that situation with help. But people who, for example, are struggling, but not necessarily in debt, there are, you know, from a practical point of view, there are ways and means of increasing your income without necessarily changing anything within your job. There are ways and means of decreasing your expenditure. And sometimes people can't see the wood for the trees. So when they're looking at all their expenditure, they think, well, this is the norm here. What can I save? But when you start to look at each one in turn and say, apart from the priority payments like utilities and things like that, where you've got other like subscriptions, how are you benefiting from this?
Yeah.
When was the last time you used it? And things like this, and start to actually unpick some of the expenditure that actually people could leave out and not actually miss. So
it's one of those things, isn't it, that you can actually put your head, you can put your head in the sand and go, oh, I don't want to do it. And then you think, oh, well, that's only 10 quid or that's only that. But all of those things start to add up. And it does give you quite a sense of control when you go through your bank account and things. I mean, the main thing is go through your phone and check you've not got loads of apps on, you know, you sign up for things and they suck you in. I'm kind of automatically, as soon as it's a free trial, I go automatically go and cancel it so that you don't forget it rolls over and you get a bill for something. But there's lots of lots of things really do push you into that sort of position, don't they?
They do. And I tell you another thing as well that people don't often think about. This may well, and I'm not being sort of gender specific, but this may well apply to ladies more than men. Certainly more than me anyway, and that's haircuts, you know, going to the salon. If you have a regular appointment, how about delaying it a week? It's amazing over a period of time how much you end up saving. It's asking questions like that. Could I delay?
One of the few benefits of lockdown, you know, lots of people learn to dye their own hair and you can go for a lot longer than you
really. Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. Yeah, I certainly don't have a problem with that. It's more like polishing my head.
Your major area of investment.
Yeah,
no, but you're absolutely right. It's just extending that extra thing, those little things. So that could be as many, that could actually mean one less haircut over that course of the year. So these little things that you can, that you think you can't cope without. It makes sense.
I think
also going to a home hairdresser rather than the expensive salon, etc., etc.
Yeah. I think the other thing as well is it's building people's confidence around managing their money. And I think another area, and I alluded to this early on, why people don't have a spending plan, a budget, a financial plan, is because they just don't feel that confidence in being able to deal with it. So it's helping people develop that confidence. And when you look at, it's understandable, when you look at the financial market, so many issues are so complex, from pensions, tax, you know, investments. It looks very complicated, but in actual fact, managing our money is quite simple, and it needs to be made simple. Not to denigrate anyone, it's just simply we're overcomplicating stuff, and we shouldn't be. And managing your money is not a complex issue. So it's building people's confidence. And as you build their confidence and they feel like now they're the ones in the driving seat, they know what's coming in, they know what's going out, they're in control, they can now make informed decisions. The moment you're in a stress situation, your ability to think rationally and logically diminishes immensely. And they say that 80% of our financial decisions are made out of an emotional state. So if we don't understand our emotional state, we might actually be making decisions that we later regret.
Is that like, don't go to the supermarket hungry? You can't even buy
exactly.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So, I mean, those are all really good sort of common sense things that we can think about ourselves as lay people. And if you are getting somebody to who is really stuck, would you recommend then referring them to one of the bodies that you talked about? Because I don't personally see that myself as an HR professional in an organization necessarily, I don't want to be sitting down with somebody helping them go line by line through their direct debits, right? Yeah. So what would you, from a person, and you want to have this balance between being supportive, but without taking on other people's responsibilities. So how would you say HR should play it?
I think HR shouldn't see it as something that it's their responsibility to deliver. I think what's important is for HR to appreciate that there is expertise out there, myself, part of that remit, who has specialisms to be able to sit down with individuals and groups of people. If somebody is experiencing indebtedness, then certainly those organisations I mentioned earlier they need to seek help and advice from them. And we can quite easily put them in touch with those. You as HR professionals can do that. And it doesn't have any sort of cost to the company. But if you're wanting to support your employees with well-being, and one of the biggest areas is financial well-being, then you need to consider expertise outside of yourselves.
Yes.
Draw some of that expertise in. And it's no good just doing financial education, albeit that that is very good and it's valid and it's important. And you can get a lot of that information online. The Money Helper from the Money and Pension Service, their website, the Money Helper website, is brilliant. And the Money Saving Expert, there's lots of tips and advice and things like that on there. But if you really want to help somebody understand their own well-being around money, then you need somebody like myself who goes beyond just the educational side, helps people establish what is my relationship with money? Why do I feel the way I do? Why does it cause me so much stress? Where does that originate from? Some guidance then and how to redo the narrative around their thinking around money.
So you're definitely going below, so you can give this kind of technical help, the sort of specific, this is what to do and what not to do, but you're saying helping to cure it and get underneath the problem. I suppose it's a bit like where you have employee assistant program, where you can phone out somebody get some counselling or something about an emotional issue. What you're saying is maybe get somebody, you're kind of being a financial counsellor, you're offering the technical bit, but also helping people understand why they feel the way they do about it so that they can solve the emotion around money potentially longer term.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's getting to know what's out there on the market that will actually make a real difference with people's lives. And I think the education is one thing, and it's important, but it's not sufficient in itself. And like they say, behavioral scientists say that 20% of the decisions we make around money are rational. The other 80%. Is emotional. And you're thinking, if you don't understand yourself, if we don't take people on that journey to discover themselves, to discover what their beliefs are, their values are, their attitudes and habits around money, then actually we're not fully equipping them to make well-informed decisions to enable them to move forward and create a resilient future. And so that's what we're about, is giving people that sort of increased sense of confidence and a feeling of security and peace of mind around money, not just the educational part, but understanding themselves, which is a key influencer over how that money is managed.
Yeah, and it is something that if you can do that, it can be such a huge stressor to keep people up at night, that the benefits I can entirely see it is there. So, Phil, if people want to reach out to you, I'll get you to say in a moment where you how they can get hold of you and all that sort of thing. And you also have mentioned a huge number of really helpful sites, things like Money Helper, but also you talked about the Christians for Finance, and there are loads of names that you think. So what I'll do is I'll get you to send me these links, and we'll put them in the show notes that you've talked about some of these things, if that's all right. We can refer people on to, which then means, of course, our listeners can use them to refer on to their people if they want to. Fabulous. So Phil, if there's any final points you want to make, any final tips, please feel free, and also tell us how listeners can get hold of you.
There's one thing I would say to any of your listeners. If you are concerned about your money, do not leave it. It's so easy to think, I'll somehow solve it. But if you're not finding the ways to solve it, don't wait. The sooner the better in terms of the kind of help that people can give. From a company point of view, when you think of well-being, employee benefits and things like that, don't just think about those things. Think about what influences the individuals with regards to their thoughts about different things and money, as we've talked about. So, consider not just education, but helping people understand themselves. Self-awareness is key in this situation. So that's what I would say.
Great. Thank you very much, Phil. If people want to get hold of you, you're available on LinkedIn, aren't you? Obviously, I'll put your address on on the show notes and everything like that too.
Yes. Yeah. Brilliant. So, yeah, I'm happy to sort of help anybody out and field any questions.
And presumably you go and do sessions in businesses if you want to. The majority of your work is businesses.
Yeah, I help companies. So I'll run programs within the company. I'll also, in conjunction with that, run one-to-one confidential money coaching sessions, so people can really get to the crux of what's really bothering them, and support them in a confidential way.
Great. So it's an extra expert resource in a different,
yes,
area that we might have traditionally thought about with relation to well-being. So yeah. Thank you so much for joining me this week on the podcast. I feel lovely to speak to you again, and really appreciate you joining me.
Well, thank you very much, Lucinda, for inviting me. I've really enjoyed it. So thank you very much.
I really hope you found this week's episode useful and enjoyable. If you did, perhaps you could recommend us to a friend or colleague, or give us a review on your platform of choice. It really helps new listeners to find us. Now, you can access links to any of the information mentioned in this show via the website www.hruprising.com. Further free resources are also available at www.actus.co.uk. There you can also find out more about our software and training solutions. Finally, why not join our LinkedIn group, The HR Uprising, to share ideas and collaborate with other like-minded people professionals. Thank you for listening to The HR Uprising podcast.